The next kina is kina ches. Kina ches is a continuation of this theme where we challenge HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but actually gets even more aggressive. It escalates, and there's even more powerful imagery. And the basic theme is that the whole cosmos is affected. We say in the opening stanza, Adah Chuga Shamayim, my lament will go all the way up to the heavens. Ala iti shamayim, I invite the shamayim itself to join in my lament. Or yo machrive pamayim, I curse this day that I was destroyed twice. Again, very powerful, atypical language. In the next stanza, we talk about the desert, the midbar, and the crying that it will involve. After that, we speak about olives on a tree and how that will be affected, etc. We go on and on. Edag ro'ev alo emtza'uhu. We are looking for our shepherd. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is our shepherd, right? And we can't find him. Lo emtza'uhu. Very, very difficult. And then, if you turn the page, you get towards the end of the kina, and the stanza begin Ayalusi. We have another point which seems to be very, very painful and very difficult. We say b'chol shana omeres hi hashana hazos. Each year we think this will be the year, and each year we're back, and that adds even more pain, both for ourselves, but it also adds more of a challenge to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Imlo kiyad Hashem osas hazos. Right, this is all from Hashem. Now that on the one hand is comforting, on the other hand it's a we're condemning HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're criticizing him. How could you do this? So all of that is a continuation and, I say, an escalation of the theme which we began in the previous kina. However, Soloveitchik and others would point out that there's a pivot. And the pivot comes right when I left off, the second to last stanza. Echof lecha rosh chili, echra lecha berech. After all of my criticizing, after all of my complaints, I bow my head to you, Hashem. I bend my knees. And basically, I admit, at the end of the day, for all my complaining and all my Echa and Lo Zacharlanu and Lo Zachartas, in the end, I realize it's my fault. After all the questions and all the Echas, after soaring to the heaven and back, after all of our despair, we've reached our climax, and I can still, at the end of the day, say, Echof l'charosh, baruch dayin ha'emes. This is the tzidduk hadin. Even though Tisha B'Av allows for our challenge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it also, said the Rav, we see in the Skina, includes a very healthy dose of tzidduk hadin. And that is also part of our avoda on Tisha B'Av. Yes, we complain. Hopefully we can cry and mourn. But we also have to take some responsibility. What can we work on? A number of years ago, I saw, and it was in an article, it was in the Jewish press, by my dear friend Rabbi Yoshua Grunstein from Efrat. He wrote a whole very beautiful article about this idea, and he quoted a very powerful line from his Rebbe, the founder of one of the great Rosh Yeshivas, Yeshiva of Yeshivat Har Etzion, Rav Yehuda Amital Zatzal. It's a very beautiful paragraph, but the punchline, which is so powerful, which is the culmination of the whole paragraph, is where he says, Tshuva hi mitzvat asei sha'acherim mitzuvim aleha. Everyone's a knocker, and everyone's a mumcha, and all the tshuva that everyone else is supposed to be doing is reminiscent of a very powerful line I heard years ago. I think it was also published by Rabbi Norman Lamb, Zechar Levracha, about he tried to remind people that it says in Musaf, Mipnei Chata'enu, Galinu Mi'artzenu, not because of your sins, not because of their sins. But I've asked anybody at a random Shabbos table, what are the problems in Klal Yisrael? Inevitably, the list begins and ends with the other neighborhood and the other shul, not our community. And as Chazal taught us, Mipnei Chata'enu, Tzidduk Hadin, true Cheshbon HaNefesh, is not looking what's wrong with other people. Not that there isn't, there is wrong, but that's their job to find out. Our job is not to look out, but to look in. Or as Rabbi Grunstein beautifully used a metaphor to make this point from Avamital, we need mirrors, not windows. When we're looking to cast blame, we need to look at ourselves. So that being the case, I think this is an opportunity for all of us to do a little tzidduk hadin, to do a little cheshbon hanefesh, do a little bit of perhaps hirhurei tshuva. And I'd like to speak, if I can, specifically about one area, which I think that no matter where anyone in this room or who's watching or who will watch later today, whichever community you're from, geographically, hashkafically, or politically, we all have room to improve on, and that is the area of Shabbos. Specifically, pick Shabbos this year. We don't speak about Shabbos every year. We could, but we don't. But I'd like to speak about it this year because the fact that Tisha B'Av was Chal Yos B'Shabbos and today is a Nidcha, it's a good opportunity to remind ourselves that if even something as important as Tisha B'Av is pushed off because it would contradict the essence of Shabbos, if nothing else, that itself, that alone, highlights just how important Shabbos is. If you take a look at your source sheet, if you take a look at source number 5, it's an amazing medrash. Many of you probably are familiar with the idea, but it's kedai still to see inside. The Medrash tells us in Bereishis, in the creation story, in the name of Rashbi, Amr Shabbos L'Fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Shabbos, as it were, metaphorically, comes running and crying and, like all of us, a complainer Shabbos is, complaining to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rabbanu Shel Olam, L'Kulan Yesh Ben Zug. Everyone has a partner, every day of the week, but not me. V'li Ein Ben Zug. I'm all alone. I don't have my own partner. So Hashem responds, Amar Leah Kadosh Baruch Hu, Knesset Yisrael, he ben Zugcha. Don't worry, you're not the odd man out. Kadosh Baruch Hu says to the Shabbos, the Jewish people will be your ben Zug. And the Medrash continues, that's what the Pasuk means on a deeper level when it says, Zochor es Yom HaShabbos Lakacho. We as the Jewish people have to remember, the Shabbos is our spouse. Shabbos is our husband or wife, as it were. Shabbos is our ben zug. That's what it means. Zochor es Yom HaShabbos Lakacho. So I think if you're familiar with this medrash, or if it's new, either way, if you think about it for a moment, I think the pashtus is what? Why is Shabbos left out until HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives her the good news? So I think the pashtus is because we don't have to have gotten, you know, 5 yechidot in math or done the AP calculus. It's an odd number, 7. 1 has 2, 3 has 4, 5 has 6, and 7 has nobody. That's my whole life. I don't know, I can't remember what age I was the first time I heard this idea, but as long as I ever knew this idea, that's, I think, if I thought about it, to the extent that I thought about it, I think that's the pashtus. So take a look at what the Gra does with this. Source number 6. This is in the commentary, the collection that's called Siddur HaGra, the Gra's commentary on the Siddur. So he's commenting on the end of Al-Chadodi, which we're going to get back to in a moment. But in that context, he quotes this medrash. But look how he explains the medrash. Again, there's no trumpets. The music didn't change in the background as you're reading this gra. He doesn't let you know that he's about to give you a chiddush. He's just giving you his interpretation. But I think this is a tremendous chiddush. Says the gra, how does he bring down this medrash? After all, Yom Aleph has Dalid. Sunday has a spouse. Wednesday, Aleph has Dalid. Why? What do you see from that? Mehechetesi? Nivra bam or. Because on the one hand, yes, it talks about how there was already or on the first day, but it wasn't until Wednesday when it was really completed with the creation on Wednesday of what? The sun, the moon, and the stars. Similarly, he says, Yom Bet, what's the ben zug of Monday? Hey, Thursday. 2 and 5 go together. Because Mayim, because what happened on Monday? HaKadosh Baruch Hu was mavdil, being the mayim above the rakia, below the rakia. Exactly what that means, it's hard to understand. But only on Yom Hei was there actual separation, and there was actual mayim. Now for what happened on day 5? The fish. The fish are born. Now the fish can benefit from the mayim, the ramitachat la rakia. And finally, he says, Yom Gimel, Tuesday, is the benzug of Yom Vav. Because what happened on Yom Gimel? The waters and the earth were separated, which revealed that there was a dry earth, land. But it wasn't until Friday in which animal and man were created, so now there's someone to be on the earth. Rak HaShabbos Levad Ein LaBen Zug El Yisrael, etc., etc. So the Gra, as far as I'm concerned, is radical. He totally turns this medrash on its head, or gives a complete different interpretation. But what's the deeper message of this? So I saw in a beautiful sefer about Shabbos by Rabbi Baruch Lev, he quoted an interpretation of this Gra by one of the great experts in Machshavas HaGra in our generation, and that is the Rosh Yeshiva of Ne'er Yisrael in Baltimore, Rav Aaron Feldman. Some of you may be familiar with his book, The Juggler and the King, which is all about his adaptation, interpretations of the Agadot based on the Gra. And Rabbi Lev, who's a Talmud of Ne'er Yisrael, recounted in this book something he had heard Baal Peh from Rav Aaron Feldman. And he used this idea in order to explaining what this Gra meant. He asked the question, a question which, if we have never thought of it, don't admit it, because we should be embarrassed. I won't tell you how long ago I first realized this is a problem, but it was longer than it should have taken, because it just shows that we don't really pay attention to what we're doing. And that is, he asked a very simple and profound question. We have a long week. We work hard. We're exhausted. Hopefully, we daven throughout the week and in shul and with a minyan, etc., and we do mitzvahs. But we're exhausted and we're harried and we're running. And then we get to a great high point for us, Friday night. In our generation, what does that mean? Can finally turn off the phone. Can go to shul. We're not rushed. Hopefully, we have a nice shul, a beautiful shul, lay b'dik davening, good chazin. And even if you're not doing one of the tunes where they sing everything out loud, that's signon. But still, it's beautiful, something special about Friday night davening. And then you get to the apex, you get to Lechadodi. Do you ever bother to think about what's going on in Lechadodi? This is our Likrat Shabbat, this is our we're getting into Shabbos moment. Lechadodi has almost nothing to do with Shabbos. Again, you don't have to admit it if you never realized it before. But you got to realize that. The first two stanzas talk about Shabbos. Dos is alles. Everything else doesn't talk about Shabbos at all. It talks about Yerushalayim, Beis HaMikdash, longing for a return, eventually hopefully rebuilding Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash. Mikdash Melech, all the way to Bowie B'Shalom. The subject is mainly Yerushalayim, hope and renewal for the Beis HaMikdash and Mashiach. What is going on? Why do we do that? So Rav Feldman explained based on this Gra. What's the Gra getting at? Where did he randomly get this idea that it's really the spouses, the pairs are, as the Gra said, 1 and 4, 2 and 5. It says the idea in 3 and 6, the idea is a Ben Zug didn't just mean you have company. It meant that you had something or someone to actualize the potential therein. So on the first day, there was a potential for light. But until you had the sun and the moon and the stars, there was no actual light. It's good to have water, but what's the point of water if there's no one to benefit from it? Only fish make the water meaningful. And it's nice to have all this land mass, but until there are animals and man walking on the face of the earth, there's no point, it's just desolate. So if that's the understanding of what it means to be a ben zug, and this obviously has, not for now, implications for marriage, but that's what it means. To find your ben zug means to have that person, or in this case, the day of the week, that creation, which helps you actualize your potential. So comes along Shabbos and complains to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's so much spiritual potential that's been created, that's been implanted, that's latent in the Shabbos. It has the power to bring us to places that we can't get to during the busy week. But we're all alone. Shabbos is full of potential. But at that moment, there was no one to actualize the potential. So says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't worry. There's going to be something called the Jewish people. And they're the ones who, if they will go through Shabbos correctly, will experience and will act a heightened level of Kedusha that day of the week, which is not only good for them, that's finally Mashlim Shabbos. Because now Shabbos has its Ben Zug, someone who can actualize its potential, what the fish do for the water, what the animals do for the land, what the sun did for light. the Jewish people do for Shabbos. It gives an opportunity to actualize its potential. So, first of all, that's just a beautiful, beautiful interpretation of the Grah. So, Senator Baron Feldman, and now we can understand why Friday night of all times of the week, we're remembering, even if it's not a lament, a mournful experience, but we're remembering and in some extent lamenting the lack of Yerushalayim. Because we go into Shabbos, and again, it's at that high point, and for so many of us, the high point of our davening, unfortunately, is like the first hour of Shabbos, which is a little bit of an indictment of the next 24 hours, but for many, which is something we have to work on, but for so many of us, we have such a high moment in the Chadodi and in Kabbalah Shabbos, and it's exactly at that moment, as the sun is setting, we're gathering, we're feeling this special intimacy with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, hopefully we have that right chazen, the right tune, we're all into it, and it's at that moment that we're hit, that despite as close as I can feel, as intimate as I feel now, I realize still how far away we are. I'm still sitting in a shul in Beit Shemesh, or in Boston, or in Melbourne, or in London, or even in Yerushalayim, She'ena Benuya, yet. And it's at that moment that we realize, as close as we feel, as intimate as we feel, there's a limit to how close we can get without a built Yerushalayim, without a built Beis HaMikdash, while the Mechitza Shel Barzel still exists. It's a problem throughout the week, but we're too preoccupied to appreciate and to really feel the problem. It's Davke, as we're being aroused and inspired at Lechadodi, that's when we Davke feel the limits, and we need Bowi Kala. We're more attuned to what we're missing. So this is the beautiful interpretation I wanted to begin with to kind of set the tone for all of us to think about what our Shabbos looks like and how we could hopefully make it better. It's a beautiful idea, the Grah, Rav Aaron Feldman, really, I love it. But if we're being honest with ourselves, if I'm being honest with myself, in reality, it's hard. It's hard because I think as beautiful as those fleeting moments are throughout our Shabbos, there's two probably major problems with Shabbos. The first is all the don'ts, but the other one, and maybe in no particular order, the real problem I want to focus on about Shabbos is that there's 52 of them every year. It's not as regular as having to put on tefillin or daven every day, but it's very regular. And the more regular anything is in life, the less special it is. And that's what makes it very, very difficult. But there's a remarkable Orach Chaim, source number 7. The Pasuk says, as we all know, we say it as part of Kiddush, V'shamru b'nei Yisrael es ha-Shabbos, lasos es ha-Shabbos. What does that mean, V'shamru es ha-Shabbos? It's a weird phrase, and we take it for granted, but it's actually a weird phrase. So the Orach Chaim has other interpretations, and basically his pshat interpretation is, you know, be really, really careful about Shabbos. Don't just cavalierly, casually go through it. But Od Yirtzeh Lomar, he says, number 7, this is a remarkable, breathtaking Orach Chaim. You know what Shamar Sa Shabbos means? It should be understood, Al Derech, the Aviv Shamar Es Hadavar. Wow. The seeds of the fight between Yosef and his brothers are already evident. It's not fully boiled over yet, but it's starting. And the Torah tells us very dramatically about Yaakov. He was Shamar Es Hadavar. What do Chazal say? What does he say this means? Mamtin u mitzapeh matai yavo. In other words, Yaakov had a sense of not only the foreboding future, but hopefully even optimistically, eventually, the geula that would emerge from the difficulty that the brothers were having. It wasn't just mamtin, but mitzapeh. What a breathtaking Orach Chaim. What is he saying? What does it mean, lishmor es ha-Shabbos? To be mitzapeh for Shabbos. According to this Orach Chaim, when have we been mekayim lishmor es ha-Shabbos? Sunday through Friday. Once it's Shabbos, then it's an experience of Shabbos. But to anticipate Shabbos with excitement, that's what it means, lishmor es ha-Shabbos. Look at his words so beautifully. Hakavana bazel litzavot shlo yeh shabbat kedvar torach litzad niyet melechet haratzon umatzoh chefetz. Right? It shouldn't be, as I alluded to previously, that for most of us, what's our dominant experience? And certainly it could be for kids or for teenagers. The dominant experience is all the things I cannot do. Can't use my phone, I can't do this with my friends, I can't, I can't. That is not what Shabbos is supposed to be, a davar torach, kaved. Rather, lismoach bo b'shleimus haratzon v'chefetz b'davar v'tamid yem mamtin u'mitzapeh matayavo. that we're counting down, we're excited, we're looking forward to Shabbos. And that's the end of the pasuk, la'asot at the Shabbat. Namely, that we want to make it truly Shabbos. Yes, it's true, it's good to have rest. It's good not to have our boss be able to call us that day. It's good not to have to, if you're one of these people who has to commute, you sit in traffic for who knows how long each day. So one day a week, I don't have that. Certain people look forward to Shabbos because they don't have to go on the Begin. They don't have to be on Highway 1. They don't have to, I mean, that's easy just compared to getting through three blocks in Yerushalayim. Right? They don't have to do that. That's not what Shabbos is about. That's not what we're supposed to be mitzapeh and shomer Shabbos. Rather, we're supposed to be lasos Shabbos. Why are we so excited for it? For the spiritual energy, the renewal, the ability to rendezvous with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The fact that we actually have more time to daven. We have more time to spend with our family. More time to learn Torah. More time to go to shiurim. That's what should get us very, very excited. So on the one hand, this Or Chaim, which is so powerful, is a yet another obligation. Now, if you thought you were keeping Shabbos, now I came to share with you this Or Chaim. Bad news. Unless you're one of these people who's mamtinu mitzapeh, for the right part of Shabbos, says Or HaChaim, you're missing something. So on some level, I just added another layer of obligation to what it means to be a Shabbos observant Jew. But of course, I think it's more than that. I think he's not only giving us an obligation, he's also giving us the secret to success. And that is, it's all about a shift in attitude. You don't have to be a psychologist or psychiatrist to know, we all experience this even if we don't have the clinical language to describe it, that most of life, the meaning that we give to experiences is the meaning we give it. It doesn't matter what it objectively is. The schema through which we view it, either we tell ourselves this is good, or we tell ourselves this is bearable, or we tell ourselves this is bad, or we tell ourselves this is geferlech, or it's unbearable. It's not the thing. It's the way we're viewing it. What Or Chaim is telling us is we can change the entire experience of Shabbos if we just start looking at it through the lens of Aviv Shamaras HaDavar. If we get excited for it, if we have a paradigm shift in our attitude, it actually will be what we think it will be. Shabbos is a self-fulfilling prophecy. If we're dreading all those hours with nothing to do on a long Shabbos in the summer because of all those hours without technology and all those hours without, then it will be a miserable experience. But if we're excited for it, we tell us, wow, how lucky are we to have a Shabbos, then it will actually be that exciting. It will be that wonderful. Shabbos is a self-fulfilling prophecy. The attitude you bring into it is exactly, the Or Chaim is teaching us, how you will experience it. And I want to mention one more thing before we do the kina. And this is something which I heard not long ago, and I thought it was really, really to the point, and I want to share it with you, because I think it could help a lot of people. Some of you may be familiar with a speaker, a teacher, a writer, lives in New Jersey now, from the greater New York area, named Rabbi David Bashefkin. I think his main job is he works for NCSY, but he also teaches at YU, and he has a popular podcast. But I heard him, not on his own podcast, which is very good, I heard him being interviewed on a podcast called Kosher Money, which is also a very interesting and very important podcast by some Jews from the Five Towns, all about the challenges, the financial challenges of being frum, which until very recently no one was talking about, and it's a really, really big challenge, less so in Israel, for obvious reasons, but in America, and especially on the East Coast, one of the biggest challenges of being frum is how expensive it is to be frum. There's a whole podcast dealing with that challenge, and they've had some very, very prominent financial people on in the frum community to give advice and insights into budgeting and mortgages and all sorts of things, and et cetera, et cetera. So Rabbi Bashefkin is not any of those things. So why was he on? He was giving, I guess, a more religious or spiritual approach to money. But one of the things that he said there, which I was so taken by, and I actually wrote him this week, because I couldn't remember, and it was months ago, I don't remember how long ago I heard this, but it was in my mind. Once I started this week, when I decided I want to speak about Shabbos on Tisha B'Av, all of a sudden that interview came back to me. I couldn't even remember where I'd heard it. So I actually texted him, and he sent me the link of this interview that he had given to the Kosher Money podcast. And the context there was advice on how to prioritize. Right? Everyone has a finite amount of money, a limited amount of money. Right? Someone who works in Jewish communal work presumably has less than someone who does other things. But no matter how rich you are, everyone has a finite amount of money. And unless you are one of the rarest of rare, you have to make decisions about what yes and what no. So he was giving his advice, and that was the context. But in that context, he mentioned in his own life certain things that he had stopped doing, and because he had stopped doing those, he had a certain amount of extra money, because he no longer did X and Y. And as a result, what did he do with that extra money? He invested it. He invested it in Shabbos. And his line, which was so beautiful, which I've never forgotten, he said, in my family, every Shabbos is a vacation. They spend more than they ever did on the wine, on the food, not to impress people. He dafka spoke about how he doesn't like having company on Shabbos. He has little kids. And he says, the language in our family is we're going on vacation for Shabbos. It's a staycation. Just to be with his children, to have delicious food. He created an entire language and culture in his family, which I thought was so brilliant. Turn Shabbos into a vacation. You don't have to spend thousands of dollars. You don't have to travel around the world. You can have a vacation right in your own home with the people you love the most. Then it's not just, you know, you get a few weeks off, you know, in the summer. You can have Shabbos you can have a vacation 52 weeks a year. That's a lot of vacation days. It's an attitude. What a brilliant, brilliant insight. I thought it was so, I was so taken by it. And even though he speaks about, you know, adding to the food and to the wine, and et cetera, of his Shabbos table, I don't think that's a steer to what the Or Chaim was saying. If you think the food and the wine is an end in of itself, so that would be a contradiction to what the Or Chaim is saying. But if you're using the extra special things and goodies, and you talk about buying prizes for his kids, and why should it be the only when the kid goes to shul or snif that they get the prizes for the parsha questions? He loads up on that at his own table. And the secret by that is you can get cheap stuff. If you have young kids, I want to just point that out. He doesn't know that yet, but there's an escalated cost to the gifts you have to give your kids. But okay, so start young. You set the bar at a cheaper cost. But budget money for Shabbos. What a brilliant, what a simple but profound insight. It could change. I think it's incredible. I say this as someone who is one of those Jews who works for a living on Shabbos. Shabbos is not my day of rest, so maybe people like me have a little bit of an extra challenge. But nevertheless, whatever you do for a living, doesn't matter. It's all about the attitude. If you take the attitude of the Or Chaim, you have this insight or any other insight that works for you, I think that every community has their challenges. And Shabbos, I'm sure, could be better in every community. I'm sure the way challenge would be better in one community might be different than it would be better in another community. But at least in my communities, not only my actual community, but my broader community, I can think of many specific things that we could be doing better in the Ruchnius, et cetera, of the Shabbos experience for the adults and for the kids. And this is, I think, a year, and this is a kina where we can think about that. This is a kina that's tzidu kadin. It's not just about complaining about a Kaddish Baruch Hu, complaining what he didn't do for us. What about what we're not doing for him? I think one of the things that all of us, each on our own level, remember, it's not about mipta, it's not chatatam, it's about chataenu. What can we do in our own communities, in our own homes, with our own families, to make our Shabbos more special, more exciting, so that we and our children and our grandchildren and our broader communities have that feeling of mamtin umitzapeh. If we're there, that's amazing. This is not for you. If there's any gap between that and we or where our children are now, so this is an opportunity, I think, today and during this kina and generally on this year, Tisha B'Av, to think about how we can do better, how we can come closer to having a more ideal Shabbos experience.